vote for us. You need to fundraise for us because we're going to save Roe. And I'm just asking when, because it's been well over a decade of this, and I want to know where's the action. Today marks the 481st day that President Biden has been in office, and he has only used the word abortion once. He has not given us a plan. He has not had an open meeting with people who are having abortions or providing abortions in this moment. In fact, he has spent the last 2 weeks since this leak meeting with police officers to give them more money. He has met with gun manufacturers. And so my question is, at what point are we, those of us who've had abortions, who are trying to have abortions right now and providing abortions, going to get that same attention from our pro-choice president? It is super important that everyone votes, absolutely. And you should vote for politicians who are going to protect your bodily autonomy, whether it's abortion rights or trans rights. But also, when those elected officials are in office, it is not enough to vote for them. We need to ask them to do their jobs. Where is the plan? President Biden promised us a whole of government response, and we need to see it.
Renee Bracey Sherman, we want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of We Testify. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland joined hundreds of cities around the country over the weekend for Bans Off Our Bodies rallies. A series of mass shootings killed and injured several people over the weekend in Buffalo, New York, Laguna Woods, California, and Houston, Texas. And in international news, experts say Russian forces have likely abandoned plans to seize territory in parts of Ukraine's east and will concentrate just on the Luhansk region of the Donbas. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 16th, 2022. I'm Althea Billings. Tomorrow is the last day to mail in your Oregon 2022 primary ballot. Voters can, for the first time in state history, mail their ballots as late as Election Day on Tuesday, May 17th, and have them count as long as they are postmarked that day. This is a primary, which means if you're a registered Republican or Democrat, you can choose to vote in a party affiliate race. However, if you're an unaffiliated voter, you can still fill out a ballot for nonpartisan races. Who is on your ballot for U.S. House of Representatives will depend on where you live in Oregon. Voters will also be casting ballots for local representatives in the Oregon legislature. On Friday, more than 66,000 Oregonians returned ballots to county elections offices, lifting turnout within about 1 percentage point of where it stood at the same time 4 years ago. Turnout had been lagging substantially this year compared to the 2018 primary, which itself set a new low for official turnout at just 34%. But Friday's surge suggests it's not certain that this spring's turnout will be even worse. As of Friday, 25% of Democrats and 25% of Republicans had returned ballots to county elections offices. But Oregon's 1 million plus voters who are not affiliated with any party weren't even close to matching that. State records show only 7% of unaffiliated voters have returned ballots. Preliminary results for races will be released shortly after 8 p.m. on Tuesday. More than 1,000 pro-choice activists rallied together in Portland on Saturday in response to a leaked draft opinion that the Supreme Court could overturn Roe v. Wade. Portland joined hundreds of cities around the nation for Bans Off Our Bodies rallies in favor of reproductive rights. The Chapman Square rally was part of a national day of action organized by Planned Parenthood and other groups. Similar rallies took place in communities across the state and nation. Even though Oregon has comprehensive reproductive laws in place, many say they're also fighting for the women who may have to travel to the state for care. Oregon officials have made their pleas to the public, voicing worries that Black, Indigenous, and people of color will likely be hit the hardest. Governor Kate Brown, who attended the rally, reiterated in a speech that Oregon will remain a welcoming and safe place for people seeking reproductive health care or abortions. Officials said that while Oregon passed a law in 2017 that protects abortion rights in the state, that could change if Congress steps in following a potential Roe v. Wade overturn. Many Oregonians are struggling to find childcare, which has a major impact on families. It's one of the issues on voters' minds as they cast their ballots in Oregon's primary election. Eric Tegedoff has more.
Oregonians are casting their ballots for Tuesday's primary election. One issue affecting many voters is access to child care. Courtney Hellstein with the organization Family Forward Oregon says child care affordability was a problem before COVID-19, and the pandemic has only exacerbated it. She says women, particularly women of color, have felt the disproportionate impact of care costs and accessibility. Hellstein says the cost means some have to make tough decisions.
The result of all these high costs is that too many families are actually forced to choose between childcare, between meals, between other basic necessities. And they're also having to weigh the financial costs of, is it actually more cost effective for me and my family for me to not work?
Hellstein says demand has never been higher for child care, but workers in the field are among the lowest paid in the country. She says there have been some successes in the Oregon legislature, including investments in early childhood learning and community-led pilot projects. Matt Newell Chang with the nonpartisan nonprofit Oregon Food Bank says access to child care is a hunger issue. The food bank surveyed candidates for governor about food insecurity, and their responses are posted on its website. Newell Ching says there's a question about child care because Oregon Food Bank believes it will continue to be an issue for Oregon families.
Whoever the next governor is, we believe it's critical that we as a state come together to ensure kids have a safe place to be while parents are working, because it impacts every community's ability to rebuild and thrive.
Hellstein says we need to look at child care differently.
We're seeing the beginning of this culture shift across the country, but definitely in the state of Oregon, of really starting to reframe access to child care from kind of like a personal problem to a societal problem, to a community benefit.
The deadline to vote in Oregon's primary is Tuesday. Drop sites for ballots will be open until 8 p.m. This is the third in a four-part series about hunger ahead of Tuesday's primary. I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
Baby formula manufacturer Abbott said Monday it reached an agreement with U.S. health officials to restart production at its largest domestic factory. Abbott did not immediately detail the terms of the agreement they reached with the Food and Drug Administration, which has been investigating safety problems at the Sturgis, Michigan facility. After production resumes, Abbott has said it will take at least 8 weeks to begin shipping new products to stores. This comes as a nationwide shortage tied to the plant's shutdown earlier this year has been affecting parents across the country. Production halted at the facility in February after reports that four infants who drank formula manufactured at the plant had fallen ill with rare and serious infections caused by Chronobacter sakazaki bacteria. Two of the babies died. A whistleblower also detailed allegations to the FDA that Abbott was hiding safety issues months before the infant formula was recalled in February. This squeezed baby formula suppliers that were already strained by supply chain disruptions and parent stockpiling during COVID-19. The Biden administration has come under intense pressure over the last week to do more to ease the shortage of formula that has forced parents of infants to go to significant lengths to feed their children. The American Academy of Pediatrics and the FDA both caution parents against making their own baby formula. Infants have very specific nutritional needs, which require a very specific balance of hydration and nutritional density. Experts say parents who are looking for baby formula should try smaller local stores in their area, order from manufacturers' websites, or ask your pediatrician to call in for medical requests. A series of mass shootings killed and injured several people over the weekend in Buffalo, New York, Laguna Woods, California, and Houston, Texas. In Buffalo, an 18-year-old white man wearing body armor and live streaming with a helmet camera opened fire around 2:30 p.m. local time on Saturday outside Tops Friendly Market, a supermarket in a predominantly black neighborhood. The gunman streamed the shooting to a small audience on Twitch for several minutes before the platform cut off his feed. According to police, the gunman began shooting in the parking lot and then moved inside the store. Security guard Aaron Salter fired multiple shots, but none penetrated the gunman's armor. The gunman killed Salter, who was black, and then stalked through the aisles, shooting shoppers. When police confronted the gunman, he put his rifle to his own neck, but surrendered and dropped the gun with coaxing from the officers. A document circulated widely online, purportedly written by the shooter, seemingly outlining racist, anti-immigrant, and anti-Semitic beliefs. Among them was a desire to drive all people not of European descent from the United States. The FBI is investigating the shooting as both a hate crime and racially motivated violent extremism. In Laguna Woods, California, a man who opened fire during a lunch reception at a church on Sunday was detained by parishioners. One person was killed and four others were critically wounded in the afternoon shooting at Geneva Presbyterian Church. The suspect, an Asian man in his 60s, is in custody and deputies recovered two handguns at the scene. A spokesperson for the sheriff's office said the majority of those inside the church at the time were believed to be of Taiwanese descent. A motive for the shooting wasn't immediately known, but investigators don't believe the gunman lives in the community. In Houston, Texas, two people were killed and three more were taken to a hospital with injuries after a shooting Sunday at a crowded flea market. Thousands of people were shopping at the market, 14 miles north of Houston's downtown, when the shooting began around 1 p.m. Police said the shooting at the open-air market arose from an altercation that involved at least two guns and all five of the people. Investigators believe one of the people hospitalized was among those who opened fire, and two more suspected shooters were detained at the scene. Law enforcement said multiple shots were fired and that deputies recovered two pistols from the scene. Authorities did not immediately provide further information about what led to the shooting, but said all the people involved appeared to know each other. An initiative that is gathering signatures would repeal Washington state capital gains tax on stocks, bonds, and other assets worth more than $250,000. But the measure appears to be struggling to gain support. Eric Tegedoff has more.
An initiative that would repeal Washington's capital gains tax on the state's richest residents is struggling to gain traction. I-1929 would eliminate a 7% tax on stocks, bonds, and other assets worth more than $250,000, which lawmakers approved in the 2021 session. It's projected to bring in $450 million for child care and education if it goes into effect in 2023. Aaron Ostrom with the progressive organization Fuse Washington says it would only be levied on a small number of people.
These are people who own yachts and are looking to buy a second yacht. This is not just rich people. This is the ultra wealthy who are looking to further rig a system that's already rigged in their favor at the expense of child care and early childhood education.
Supporters of I-1929 argued that the tax passed by the state legislature last year is an income tax, which is unconstitutional in Washington state. A judge agreed in March and overturned the measure lawmakers passed last year. Attorney General Bob Ferguson is appealing that decision to the Washington Supreme Court. Organizers of I-1929 have until July 8th to collect about 325,000 signatures. Ostrom says they are far behind and have not even reached $1 million in donations for the campaign.
The longer you wait, the more expensive it gets. So they would probably have to pay over $10 million to get on the ballot at this point, and they're not raising funds that are anywhere near that neighborhood, and they're not showing any signs of actually starting to move into signature gathering.
Ostrom disagrees that the capital gains tax passed by lawmakers qualifies as an income tax.
It's a tax on extraordinary capital gains for a tiny number of ultra-wealthy people. And Wall Street speculation is not the same thing as earning income.
I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
Sweden is joining neighboring Finland in formally seeking to join NATO. The move deals a serious diplomatic blow to Russian President Vladimir Putin as his war reshapes Europe's security landscape. Finland, which shares a border with Russia, said Sunday that it intends to apply for membership in the Security Alliance. Sweden's prime minister then announced Monday that the country would drop its long-held non-aligned status and apply to join the transatlantic military alliance NATO. This is the latest evidence that Russia's invasion launched to counter NATO and control Kyiv is increasingly strengthening the West, while Russia scales back on its goals in the East after struggles have persisted. Experts have said Russian forces have likely abandoned plans to seize territory in parts of Ukraine's east and will likely concentrate on taking over just the Luhansk region of the Donbas. The apparent reduction in the military's ambition in its eastern offensive comes as Russian forces have likely run short of trained reservists. The International Criminal Court has said it will send investigators to Ukraine to investigate possible war crimes. The court, which is based in The Hague, Netherlands, opened a probe into possible war crimes in late February, as has the UN and Ukraine's Prosecutor General's Office. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on Portland City Council candidates Avraham Cox and Renee Stevens, as well as Metro City Council candidate Ashton Simpson. At 6, it's Labor Radio. Then at 6:30, stick around for Prison Pipeline. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 47 degrees. Tomorrow, those clouds continue with a high of 67. Today in history, in 1985, the discovery of the ozone hole is announced. Three scientists from the British Antarctic Survey announced their detection of abnormally low levels of ozone over the South Pole in the scientific journal Nature. Their discovery, commonly known as the ozone hole, became an example of mankind's ability to damage the Earth's atmosphere, as well as one of the most famous success stories in the history of climate activism. The quote of the day is from Pakistani activist for female education and Nobel Peace Prize winner Malala Yousafzai, who said, quote, "We realize the importance of our voices only when we are silenced." Tesla billionaire Elon Musk's plans to buy Twitter have been put on temporary hold. Some now doubt if he will proceed with the $44 billion acquisition. Musk tweeted late last week that his bid was temporarily on hold as he seeks to accurately detail the number of fake accounts on the social media platform. He had previously disclosed concerns with spam bots that mimic real people on Twitter and questioned whether Twitter was underreporting them. In 2017, an academic census of all of Twitter's active English-language accounts estimated that up to 15% were bots of some kind. Musk tweeted, quote, "Twitter deal temporarily on hold, pending details supporting calculation that spam/fake accounts do indeed represent less than 5% of users." The problem of fake accounts on Twitter is well known. In its quarterly filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, Twitter itself conceded that its estimate of bot accounts may be an undercount of the true figure. Stock in both Twitter and Tesla swung sharply in opposite directions Friday, with Twitter stock falling 9.7% and Tesla shares rising 5.7%. Musk has sold more than $8 billion worth of his Tesla shares to help finance his Twitter purchase. But Tesla's share price has fallen since Musk announced his intentions to buy the social media company. Tesla shares have lost a quarter of their value in the last month and more than 50% since early April when Musk confirms that he had purchased a large stake in Twitter. The irony is that Tesla shares may have recently benefited from Twitter bot accounts. A University of Maryland researcher concluded that the bots have been used to generate hundreds of thousands of positive tweets about Tesla, potentially elevating its stock price. Some experts say Musk is using the number of spam accounts as a pretext to pull out of the deal. Wedbush analyst Dan Ives called Musk's tweet bizarre and said Wall Street is skeptical. Ives added, quote, "The street view is that he's trying to find an excuse to basically talk down the deal price or walk." If the deal does not go through, Musk could have to pay a $1 billion fee. Officials say the Buffalo, New York mass shooting was racially motivated. Russia is said to be down 30% of its land forces in Ukraine, and polling suggests swayable Republican voters are turning against Biden. With more on these stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This event was committed by a sick, demented individual who has fueled a daily diet of hate.
New York Attorney General Letitia James called the deadly mass shooting in Buffalo an act of domestic terrorism. 10 people were killed after an 18-year-old opened fire at a supermarket. The white suspect reportedly targeted an area with a high concentration of black residents. President Joe Biden also condemned the shooting.
We must all work together to address the hate that remains a stain on the soul of America. The hearts are heavy once again, but a resolve must never, ever waver.
Biden spoke at the National Peace Officers Memorial Service, which honored the lives of roughly 550 fallen officers. 3 months into the war, Russia has likely lost one-third of the ground forces it sent into Ukraine, according to UK's defense minister. Ukraine says more than 25,000 Russian troops have been killed, while Russia only reports about 2,000 deaths. On Saturday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell led a delegation to meet with Ukraine's president, and Sunday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with NATO allies in Berlin.
We don't know how the rest of this world war, will unfold, but we know that a sovereign and independent Ukraine will endure. In supporting Ukraine, we're also defending the principles of sovereignty and independence that are foundational to global peace and security.
The Berlin meeting also addressed Finland and Sweden's hopes of joining the alliance. Outraged by a leaked draft opinion suggesting the Supreme Court will strike down the constitutional right to abortion, protesters took to the streets in cities across the U.S. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, nearly half of states are expected to ban the procedure. A Republican research survey says just 30% of voters who supported former President Donald Trump in 2016 but voted for Biden in 2020 would back the Democrat again. The survey cited what it described as Biden's progressive positions on gender pronouns, Black Lives Matter protests, and so-called cancel culture. With two babies at home, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said he understands the impact of the national infant formula shortage. Sunday, he said the administration plans to boost imports, crack down on price gouging, and give parents more buying flexibility within government assistance programs. Benicia Wright of Ohio relies on the WIC program to feed her two little ones.
They've been changed from one formula to another. Even with that, there's just not enough. I traveled about six different stores on three different days looking for the formulas.
Some Democrats want the White House to use the Defense Production Act to ramp up production. Twitter is accusing Tesla CEO Elon Musk of violating a non-disclosure agreement by discussing the number of bots and fake accounts on the site. Twitter says it's fewer than 5%, but the billionaire says among daily users, it could be as high as 9 out of 10. Musk's $44 billion bid to buy the social media platform is on hold. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Tribal leaders and others are absorbing the impact of the recently released report on boarding schools from the U.S. Department of Interior. Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt says he's concerned that tribes in the state are working to set up safe havens for abortion clinics, and American Indians and Alaska Natives suffered the largest increase in firearm suicides from 2019 to 2020. With these stories and more, it's Megan Kamrick with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders and others are absorbing the impact of the recently released report on boarding schools from the U.S. Department of Interior. An organization in South Dakota aims to honor students who died at boarding schools in that state with a memorial project. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger reports they also intend to push for more follow-through from those responsible.
The new federal report shows South Dakota had 30 boarding schools, the fourth most in the country. Federal government policy forced assimilation for Native children, including language and culture eradication. Amy Sazu is Sichangu and Oglala Lakota. She's the executive director of the Remembering the Children Memorial Project. Sazu says there's more to come from the federal investigation.
Very notably, it's just like a first step. Tons of records that still need to be located, churches and offices and city offices and state offices that need to be held accountable, graves and children that need to be found and protected.
So far, the investigation has identified at least 500 deaths at boarding schools across the country. It's found 33 marked burial sites, 6 unmarked burial sites, and 14 locations with both marked and unmarked burial sites. The Interior Department says it will not disclose specific locations of burial sites to protect against grave robbing, vandalism, and other disturbances. Local researchers previously determined at least 45 children died at the Rapid City Indian School, which is now the location of the Oyate Health Center. The Memorial Project will honor those children at a spot behind West Middle School in Rapid City. The group will break ground on the memorial later this year. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
Oklahoma Governor Kevin Stitt says he is concerned that tribes in the state are working to set up safe havens for abortion clinics following a new law banning abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy. Stitt, who is Cherokee, told Fox News Sunday that tribes in Oklahoma are, quote, super liberal.
They think that you could be 1/1000th tribal member and not have to follow the state law. And so that's something that we're watching. But I'll tell you this. Oklahomans will not think very well of that if the tribes try to shut up abortion clinics, abortion on demand in eastern Oklahoma.
Nearly 40% of eastern Oklahoma is reservation land, according to a 2020 U.S. Supreme Court ruling, which makes those areas subject to tribal and federal laws. No Oklahoma tribes have announced any plans to establish abortion clinics on tribal land. Native Americans and Alaska Natives suffered the largest increase in firearm suicides from 2019 to 2020. Robin Vincent with the Mountain West News Bureau has more.
Dr. Tim Simon co-wrote the new CDC report that showed this deep disparity. He says there are multiple factors at play, including poverty.
Firearm homicide and suicide are associated with economic conditions and how racial and ethnic minority groups are more likely to live in communities with high surrounding poverty.
The report found that 24% of the U.S. population lived in counties with high poverty rates in 2020. For American Indians and Alaska Natives, that percentage was nearly double. Simon says potential reasons for the increase in firearm suicides include a spike in gun sales and the many stressors people have faced during the COVID-19 pandemic. For National Native News, I'm Robin Vincent.
If you or someone you know is thinking about suicide, there is help. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is at 800-273-8255. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
Disaster cleanup creates risks for workers. One nonprofit is pushing for better protections for people who are hired to clean up after hurricanes and other natural disasters. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on that story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. After wildfire flames die out, hurricane winds subside, or floodwaters recede, the hard work of disaster recovery begins.
Climate change has created an entirely new workforce that comes in after storms, floods, and fires to rebuild homes and hospitals and entire cities.
Saket Soni is executive director of Resilience Force, an initiative that supports the people doing this work. He says they're often migrant workers who travel from one disaster zone to another. They're hired by contractors to do dirty and sometimes dangerous work, fixing roofs, clearing debris off roads, and cleaning out damaged homes.
You have workers wading into toxic floodwater or sifting through debris that's burned by a fire full of ash and smoke and toxic substances.
He says many workers are not adequately protected or compensated. So his group pushes for better oversight of disaster recovery work and for higher wages and health benefits. And he calls on lawmakers to grant legal status to those workers who are undocumented.
Resilience workers are the essential workers of the climate era.
So he says they should be valued and protected. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 16th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Megan Kamrick, Mary Sherman, Eric Tegedoff, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 8, it's Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy, covering politics and current events while taking listener calls. At 9, it's Alternative Radio, featuring lectures and interviews with progressive thinkers. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, we'll hear Times Like Now with host Trevor Collins. Then at 11:30, it's Art Focus, featuring interviews with artists, curators, and critics talking about art, how it's made, and what it means with host Joseph Galavan. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for an in-depth look at two candidates running for Portland City Council and one for the Metro Council.
K-
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Oregonians have until tomorrow, May 17th, to send in their ballots, either by mail or by putting it in a drop box. Tonight, we feature interviews with three candidates who share their visions for their communities. Ashton Simpson is running unopposed for Metro Council Seat 1, East County. Here's our interview with candidate Ashton Simpson. What inspired you to run for the Metro Council?
The great need in terms of connecting this community, providing opportunities, tackling climate and the heat dome that we are inevitably going to have to rehash and relive again this summer. There's a lot of opportunity and missed opportunities, I should say, in terms of serving our community, particularly our youth that are caught up in gun violence. Metro has a part to play in that through the Construction Careers Pathway Program. That's one way we can help the jurisdictions within the metro area to mitigate some of those issues that we see. But we have to promote it out to folks, and we have to make sure folks know about it. And then just overall, the makeup of my community, I know that through Metro's planning and land use planning expertise, we can lift this community up. We need a lot more housing. We need a lot more supportive services within this region, and we know that that affordable housing money and that supportive services money is now just going to work. So I really want to use that to shape this community up, but also provide space for, well, first of all, keep folks here in this community and avoid displacement as much as possible, if at all, and also provide space for new residents to move in that will help lift up the area.
You're the executive director of Oregon Walks, and you serve on a number of local and regional committees, a lot of which are tied to transportation and infrastructure. How do those experiences relate to the Metro Council?
That's a great question. From my time, at least now, I just started on the Region 1 ODOT area.